from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We know how Moneyball management came to Major League Baseball. Never mind hunches and gut feelings, size up every player by their stats. What if that approach came big to the wider American workforce for hiring, firing, promotion? We may soon find out. It's moving in. This hour On Point, hiring, firing, and promotion in the age of big data. Data on you. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Would you welcome or run from statistical assessment? Are you already there? Does it work for you? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We know the old sort of movie trope of that glorious moment in an otherwise dodgy interview when somehow the interviewee pulls it all off and gets the job. 2006 film The Pursuit of Happiness, based on the life of entrepreneur Chris Gardner. Will Smith plays the young, then broke, near homeless Gardner, gets an interview for an internship with stockbroker Dean Witter. With a group of managers, he's asked about his slim qualifications.
First in your class, in school, high school?
Yes, sir.
How many in the class?
12. It was a small town.
I'll say.
Can I say something? I'm the type of person, if you ask me a question and I don't know the answer, I'm going to tell you that I don't know. But I bet you what? I know how to find the answer, and I will find the answer.
In off the street, and he gets the job. Congratulations, you're hired. Don't count on that down the road. Joining me today from Washington is Don Peck, deputy editor of The Atlantic magazine. He wrote deep on jobs and our economy in his book, Pinched. He's written the cover story for The Atlantic's latest issue. It is They're Watching You at Work. Don Peck, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
You're writing here at some length. It's really interesting about new models for assessing hires, promotions, employees, and data behind this. What's moving in, Don?
Well, really what's happening right now, you mentioned Moneyball at the outset of the discussion. Mm-hmm. And really what companies are doing, what data scientists are doing right now, is they're trying to create a sort of much larger human box score of performance. And they're using the new kind of swaths of data that are available to them both at work through our emailing habits and our online work, and at home through our surfing habits, the forums that we use. Our purchases, they're trying to correlate increasingly our behaviors, our digital behaviors with on-the-job success. And that's really the nature of the project right now. It's both exhilarating and I think kind of creepy.
I mean, we sort of understand metrics in business, lines of code per hour or per week, or you know, sales per sales period. Those are pretty standard units of measure and seem somehow equivalent to a lot of baseball box scores. But you're talking about more than that.
Oh, absolutely. So, for instance, when hiring, a lot of companies are beginning to use online tests. Their cognitive tests, their personality tests. They may seem to have little to do with work at times. Some of them are video games, in fact, where you play a game, and through your gameplay, employers are able to suss out your emotional intelligence, your social intelligence, how you solve problems. And again, what they can do is they can correlate that to strong performers who are already in the job and say, well, you're a good match for this job. You may never understand why.
So in the past, well, I mean, you write about the more distant past, the 1950s, where some of this sort of workforce science was perhaps more popular. And then it went away a bit. But we have the sense that, you know, you sent in your resume, you had your credentials, you had your diploma or diplomas, and people looked at all that, and that was the basis for a decision on hiring. You're describing a sort of fundamentally different approach to assessing people, whether just getting hired or moving up.
Absolutely. And it's funny, people forget in the 1950s, companies were actually much more intentional about hiring and promoting to some extent than they are today. And big companies for professional roles quite routinely would subject candidates to days of testing batteries. They would test, again, their cognitive abilities, their personalities. They would give them kind of work skill tests. They aspired to be very scientific in how they hired, not just looking for the right person for an entry-level job, but looking for people who could move up into senior management. And that fell away largely in the 70s and 80s and to an extent the 90s for a number of reasons. One was many of the tests turned out not to be that scientific. They were based on theories. They were based on norms rather than kind of a normal behavior rather than strong performance. And part of it was that companies became concerned that they might be inadvertently excluding whole classes of people through these tests, which of course became legally actionable with the Civil Rights Act in 1964. So what's happening today is to an extent a return to some of those methods but much more fine-grained and based on clear correlations to success in specific jobs. If you look at the way people have been hired in recent decades, it's really kind of extraordinary. A lot of companies simply use informal or what's known as unstructured interviews. Interviewers make up their own questions. They ask questions. They ask different questions of different people, and they kind of go with their gut. There's something to be said for that. But in the absence of data and of kind of more structured methods of hiring people, what you also get is a lot of biased hires and a lot of bad hires as a result. The pendulum is swinging the other way again today.
We're going to talk with a little company that's making video games that are supposed to help potential employers decide if they want to hire you or not. We'll talk with a very big company in this hour that is doing a lot with algorithms and online testing. Maybe won't even have a job interview. You'll be fully tested out before you ever get to that point. May not do it at all. So now here comes workforce science back in a new age, the big data age. And what's the range of kinds of data? I mean, this is assessing work product. Some work products are relatively easy to assess, I suppose. But it's more than that as well. You write about Sandy Pentland at MIT throwing badges on people that also assess their interaction with their colleagues at work all day long, every day.
Yeah, I find this fascinating and again, a little bit creepy as well. They're like little Star Trek-style lapel badges, as I understand it. I haven't actually seen physical representations of them, but that's my understanding. Basically, what they do is they throw off about 100 data points per minute on average, and they track people as they go about their work days.
Tracking
how much time
what?
Are they They're tracking nearly everything, where they are, who they're talking to, how long their conversations last, how long they spend in those conversations talking versus listening, whether they're facing people directly, whether they're spending time with team members or people outside their team, the intonation of their voice. The badges track all of this, and they feed it back into a server, and algorithms look for patterns. And what Pentland has claimed is that there's really quite a lot that's highly predictive here, almost regardless of the nature of a team. So, for instance, he says that about a third of team performance can be predicted merely by how much face-to-face contact team members have. Too much face-to-face time is as much a problem as too little. He says he's discovered the data signature of natural leaders. These are people who circulate frequently, who keep conversations short but energetic, who listen at least as much as they talk. So it's pretty remarkable stuff. And his company is using this in consulting projects. They're using it to give people feedback about their own behavior against the benchmarks of natural leaders and successful teams so that they can theoretically improve. But it's also not hard to see a day as the technology improves, as costs come down, where perhaps some companies begin using this technology more widely and start using it for evaluation and promotion as well.
Boy, big data can sound cold and far away, but this is intimate. It's right on your lapel. It's tracking everything you do in the course of a day on top of what's not in those interactions, your work product, your sort of digital trail outside the office. I mean, are we headed toward possibly an era in which everybody, you know, has the equivalent of a credit rating, some kind of hireability score that hangs around their neck or somewhere invisible in the digisphere and determines who gets hired and who gets promoted?
I think we're moving toward that world. I don't know whether that vision will ever be fully realized. I think there will always be a place for face-to-face interviewing, for more qualitative methods. But yes, I mean, if you look at what's already happening, there are companies out there for software programmers, for instance, that do exactly what you've described. They've kind of loosed their algorithms on the web to look for the open source coding that individual programmers have done, the way programmers communicate on professional websites, the language they use, which is quite telling or can be quite telling about their actual skills, about whether they are well-respected and whether their code is reused frequently. And there's a company called Guild, for instance, but there are others as well, that develops scores for programmers, employed, unemployed, looking for jobs, not looking for jobs. They develop scores for pretty much every programmer in the country, and they use that to sell to employers to help them find workers who are underpaid, undervalued.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Moneyball-style analytics coming to the world of hiring, firing, and promotion, how employers are going to look more and more at your performance data, not your handshake, when it's time to decide. Don Peck is with us from The Atlantic. His big piece there, cover story, is they are watching you at work. And maybe beyond these days, when people look to hiring, popular culture has fun, of course, with the way these things go. Google, famous for its kind of unorthodox hiring practices in the film The Internship. A couple of middle-aged salesmen, played by Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn, lose their regular jobs, decide to try their luck with Google. They sit down for an interview, and instead of your typical questions, they get a couple of now infamous Google challenges. Here's one.
You're shrunken down to the size of nickels and dropped to the bottom of a blender. What do?
You take her flat on your
back
like
you
this.
Just lay back, enjoy that breeze, pretend it's a fan.
Once this blender's on, it's on forever.
It's on.
Respectfully, I got to disagree. We sold blenders, and even the best model in the world is only going to run maybe 10 or 11 hours. So we're getting out, and when we do, we're better off for it. You've got two nickel-sized men free in the world. Think of the possibilities.
Well, you may not be Owen Wilson or Vince Vaughn. They're playing it the best they can. Don Peck joins us from Washington. Don, it's interesting. People listening closely. Some have experience with this. Some like it. Some don't. But Leonard writes us here on the website. It says you describe this as both exhilarating and creepy. He says, creepy I get. Exhilarating is lost on me. Okay, so being tracked, that can easily feel creepy. What's the exhilarating side of this in your assessment, Don?
When you look at hiring today in America, it's amazing just how biased it still is. So, and when you look at promotion, the same is true. So, I mean, what really distinguishes CEOs from other people, for instance, you know, a lot of it turns out to be how competent they look visually. And business scholars have demonstrated this. CEOs simply look more competent than other people. Yet those same business scholars have gone to great pains to demonstrate that merely looking competent has nothing to do with the financial performance of a company that a CEO leads. You know, tall men get promoted more than short men. Beautiful women get promoted more frequently, make more money than less attractive women. The list goes on and on and on. You know, racial biases remain astonishingly strong and generally unconscious. So, you know, the hiring system that we have today is really pretty unfair. And you see that in even in basic data. I mean, a quarter of all people who are hired in the U.S. are gone from their company within a year of their hire. And 20% of the hires that managers make are regretted. The hiring managers wish they had never hired that person. If you look at job satisfaction, it's also really astonishingly low. Only about half of all people in the U.S. are highly engaged with their jobs, according to Gallup. Nearly one in five are so disengaged that they're kind of in stealthy ways actually subverting their companies. So it's really amazing when you kind of start toting up the evidence on hiring and employment today, how dysfunctional and unfair the system is. So I think, you know, as with Moneyball, there is the potential for a fairer system, a better system that gets people matched into better jobs and better roles in which they'll be happier. And I think you also have the potential for people who have traditionally fallen through the cracks, who maybe didn't go to an Ivy League school or perhaps didn't finish college, who simply couldn't sit still in a classroom at age 18, you know, who've kind of fallen through the cracks. This system is one that should give those people more opportunities later in life because it can pick up on signals such as crowdsourced work, language on the web that can reveal real talent, but that hiring managers traditionally have trouble seeing.
Algorithms chomping through our web histories and performance and more and deciding who's going to get that job, who's going to get that promotion. Don Peck, please stand by. Karen is calling from Buffalo, New York. Karen, thanks for calling. You're on the air. What do you think?
Hi. Well, I tend to work as a contractor for corporations like Xerox, Kodak, Royal Bank of Canada, and many, many others.
Okay.
And what I see oftentimes from the staff employees is that, generally speaking, they know what data analytics are. What they really understand is that they're being watched. What they really don't appreciate, and this is just from a general point of view, is that all of those analytics are being pointed at them, looked at them, they're being watched. What I think they would really like to see is, if I'm being watched, why isn't the CEO or the vice president being watched? Why aren't these analytics being directed top-down? Because it makes sense, and I appreciated what your mm-hmm. specialist who is talking about this today, he brought that up. But just because a CEO has credentials or looks good doesn't mean he's a good CEO. But I think people in general want to see an across-the-board application of all of these analytics.
Karen, I appreciate your call. Don Peck, how about it? Eyeballing the little guy, but what about everybody, all the way to the top, are these, you know, analytics going to be aimed at the big fish too?
I hope so, and I think they will be eventually. The fact of the matter is the analytics work better when and more reliably in jobs that that are fairly standardized, where there are lots of jobs and lots of statistical observations, jobs that turn over a lot. The math is simply more powerful there, which is kind of unfortunate, you know, in given Karen's question. But no, I do think companies are really looking to promote in part based on these exact same types of analysis. So I think that you know, this system will kind of envelop everyone to a greater or lesser extent as time moves on. And I also want to respond to Karen's fear that this is kind of something that's being done to people. And there's certainly a measure of truth to that. And different companies act differently. Some, you know, will do these kinds of analyses without people's knowledge. They will do it, you know, exclusively on kind of low-level hires. A lot of companies don't operate that way. And a lot of these techniques are also ultimately, I think, likely to be helpful to the little guy, to people looking for work. You know, I mentioned Guild earlier in the conversation. That's the company that's kind of scoring software programmers across the country.
Yep.
You know, Guild is kind of helping software programmers ultimately find better work at better pay. It's Moneyball in the truest sense. You know, they're identifying people who are underpaid given their skills and performance in their current job, and kind of indirectly helping them find better work. So I don't want to deny sort of some of the unsavory possibilities here because they exist. But it's kind of a two-way street, and I think there really is a lot of good that can come from this system.
Don Peck, stand by in Washington. I want to go to a company, big company, with a lot of experience at this. It's picked it up in a big way. Joining us right now from Chicago is Terry Morse. She's Vice President of Human Resources and Recruiting at Xerox Services, oversees hiring for the company's 150 U.S. call and customer care centers, which employ about 45,000 workers. Terry Morse in Chicago, thank you very much for being with us today.
Well, hi, Tom.
I understand that it's great to have you. I understand up until 2010, you were still kind of doing the traditional interview. And where have you migrated in your hiring and assessment since then, Terry? What's your strategy now?
Absolutely. Our approach was very traditional when it came to interviewing and looking at candidates regarding their experience and what they had done.
Yeah.
And hopefully determining that they would be successful for us in the future. And in 2010, we purchased a tool called Evolve, which is an assessment tool for candidates that are applying for those high-volume type positions, so our customer care agents.
So this is now personality testing and cognitive skill assessment and multiple choice questions. It's all online.
It's all online. So now what we actually have it set up to interact with our applicant tracking system.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people go ahead and they see our postings or see our opportunities and they do that online, mm-hmm. they'll apply and they automatically get the test sent to them. That takes them to the next phase where they go ahead and they do an assessment.
Right. Don Peck quotes you saying, "We're getting to the point where some of our hiring managers don't even want to interview anymore. They just want to hire people with the highest scores." And you end up with a color-coded rating for job applicants. Red, forget about it. Yellow, maybe. And green, let's hire this person. What kind of questions or what kind of battery of questions do they go through, Terry, to get that rating?
It has some questions like, how often were you late in your position in your last role? How often do you see yourself? How many times do you see yourself missing job in the future? If you were put in this type of a situation, what would you do? You know, a lot of creative thinking, innovative thinking type questions that comes out of it. So you really start learning if people are going to be able to work independently in an environment with no paper, be able to navigate through technology mm-hmm. to look for the answers. In our training, we don't teach people the answers. We teach them how to find the answers.
Yeah.
So that assessment tool actually helps us determine if people can search and look and become innovative, have empathy, right? Be sympathetic on the phone, and truly be able to help people with their first call resolution. So all different types of questions end up with that type of a rating for us.
You've been in this realm for a couple of 3 years now. Do you see a better, more successful profile of hire coming in? Has it changed the performance of your call centers?
It has. So in the beginning, our numbers were big, right? Because we went from a traditional approach to our current approach, which is heavily assessing them up front. So right now, those people that score red, they are actually excused from going through the process.
Like,
so we're not
thanks,
even
but no thanks.
Now.
Goodbye. Right. Okay.
Exactly. And so then right now, our numbers are getting a little skinnier because our quality of person that works with us is different.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that they had experience in the past. They may have had no experience. But their assessment said, in this environment, in a paper-free environment, on the telephone, navigating through technology, and problem-solving, people will be successful. So that's the candidate now that we hire. And they now are turning to our supervisors or our trainers or our quality inspection engineers.
Does any of your assessment go beyond those questions? Do you poke around in their digital, their online presence? I don't know, their Facebook stuff or any of that? Or is that not in your scope?
That's in our scope. And so what we're finding fascinating, I think if you're sitting there, you're really believing that those people that are heavy into technology and have multiple type of avenues that they use are probably going to be best in the call center. And it's proving out to us that it's not. It's somewhat of the lighter users, you know, two or three different avenues, whether they tweet, whether they Facebook, and the empathetic type of an individual. So the more social networking they do, the less successful they are with us.
Boy, that's interesting. Don Peck, what do you make of that? Does that surprise you?
It's surprising a little bit to me, and I'm not sure I can explain that. But I mean, Terry mentioned the company Evolve. That's kind of a common finding. It's pretty amazing, kind of some of the correlations that can be drawn through these techniques. I mean, I don't know if Xerox looks at this or not, but one thing that some companies do when using these online tests is they'll look at the browser, for instance, on which you take the test, because it turns out, especially for more technical roles, that's pretty heavily correlated with success. People who maybe use Internet Explorer or a browser that comes with the computer, but may not be quite as functional as browsers that you can download online.
You mean if you have a more sophisticated browser, you're more likely to get picked up as an employee?
Exactly. It shows more initiative at one level, and it shows perhaps a little bit more savvy at another. In any case, so that's the intuitive explanation for it. In any case, though, the correlations exist, and that's really what's going on here, is that these mathematical models, they're just looking mathematically for what behaviors are associated with productivity, with retention, with job success. And then we kind of try to map on explanations for why that is. But the fact of the matter is, as with kind of social network usage, why is it that, four or more social networks is usually a bad sign? I don't really know. The math says it is. And these companies are going by the math, which again is right. On some level, makes you wonder a little bit, but it show, these correlations, they show up again and again and again with thousands and thousands of candidates. We know there's something to it.
Terry, you're using this now for call center employees. What about as you go higher up the pyramid at Xerox? Can you imagine, where do you see this going? Can you imagine this kind of approach being used, for example, one day to hire someone who sits in your position as a VP? Or is this just, for the little guys?
Well, it would be fantastic, right? I'm not so sure it would be statistically relevant. And that's where in those call center roles or those high volume roles where we do have 54,000 people working in our call centers today, we've gone through a ton of candidates to identify those good 54,000. Where my role, there's one, right? So there's not enough candidate flow to actually help you do that statistical analysis for it.
Does this travel once you've assessed somebody? Is that just Xerox information, or does that get out into the world? Can the next company down the line look at the score I got when I took your test and say, hey, come on in, or no thanks?
No, but I will tell you that we do tell our candidates if they score red, yellow, or green, so they may go to their next employer and share with them that they were green when they were over at Xerox.
And not share that they were red if they weren't. Well, what do you see in the future, Terry? You're a human resources big player here. Where does this shift our economy? What are the implications if everybody starts doing this for our workforce and our economy?
Well, what it's helping us do is truly look at those good yellow candidates, which are your mid-level candidates, and helping them with the training. So we know we need to put our arms around them more and give them a different type of a training, whether it's soft skill of training or technical training, to help them become those green type candidates. And then even with the red, so depending on some of the markets, we may be in places where there aren't enough candidates, so we have to consider those reds. And if they're reds, then we have to put more training around it. So truly, it helps the companies manage their business. So while I'm responsible for the recruiting, what we can help now is help our trainers train better and help the employees actually get more out of their employment with us.
Boy, down the road, this surely creates a world where you do not want to have a red code, a red rating.
Well, and today you may be red and tomorrow you may not, right? Because today whatever's going on in your life or your experiences mm-hmm. may deem you to be not able to be at work every single day. Not able to work with technology. And it may just be that you haven't had the experience, where in 6 months, if you went ahead and you did the test again, you may come out to be green.
Terry Morse oversees data x-ray of job applicants for Xerox services. 45,000 workers in 150 call and customer care centers. Terry, it's fascinating. Thank you very much for joining us today. Good luck to you.
Thank you, Tom. Have a great day.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Moneyball analytics coming to the world of hiring, firing, and promotion, how employees are looking more and more at your performance data, big data, not just your handshake when it's time to decide on your career direction. Don Peck is with us, deputy editor of the Atlantic Magazine. Wrote the cover story for the December issue, They Are Watching You at Work. You can link to the piece at our website, onpointradio.org. They're watching you well beyond work in some of this as well. We're going to hear in just a moment from a company that's got a video game out there that a prospective employer may ask you to play to assess your capacity, your personality, your profile before a yay or nay on hiring you. Don Peck in Washington, we've got interesting responses online here. Betsy's listening closely. She says, wow, they've got a hiring algorithm that measures my tone of voice. She writes, I hope this doesn't lead to small voice discrimination. Devlin says, under this analytical method of hiring, what will happen to non-neurotypical employees like Temple Grandin? Doubt Phil they'll pass. Of course, Temple Grandin, the kind of autism activist and doctor of animal science, is there. I mean, do you see this favoring the normative applicant, or is it possible this opens the door to the unusual applicant because they score higher or they get, I couldn't tell, as Terry talked about, whether they'd get sort of scraped out because there was just something weird.
Well, look, I think in some ways it will open doors to non-traditional candidates. And what I mean by that is, you know, people pay an enormous amount of attention right now to things like what college you went to. So if you were smart and lucky enough to go to Harvard, for instance, that stays with you for the rest of your career. And it's always a positive signal. It makes a difference even 10, 20, 30 years later, when that signal may mean less than it once did, you know, that kind of degrades. But a lot of the most elite companies really won't even consider you if you didn't go to such a school. And I think that these techniques will and are opening doors that were traditionally closed to other kinds of applicants. You know, when I talked to a lot of companies over the course mm-hmm. of my reporting, and nearly all of them told me that these techniques are enabling them to look to non-college pools, non-traditional pools, and they are hiring more people with diverse backgrounds as a result. So I view that as a very good thing. But there is the
question. Maybe less emphasis on credentials over time here.
Exactly. It's demonstrated skills and less emphasis on traditional credentials. But I do think there's a question as to whether, you know, the Steve Jobs of the world, you know, would they get a job, you know, at companies using these kinds of techniques because they think so differently that, you know, there's no good model for them. Happily, we do still have entrepreneurship, you know, and people who might not conform, you know, who have a very different profiles than what has been successful at a particular company, you know, usually have other options available to them. But I do think that's a concern. I mean, William White wrote The Organization Man in the 1950s, and he was very concerned about the conformity that tests were kind of enforcing on people and on workforces at that time. And, you know, what he found was he gave all the tests that were used by IBM and these big companies to the CEOs of those companies, mm-hmm. and he found that none of them were "quote unquote" suitable for employment. They all failed the tests.
Those tests got put in a bottom drawer pretty fast, I bet you. Let me go to Steve in Burlington, Vermont. Steve, you're on the air. Hello, Steve. Are you there, my friend?
Fighting off quite some touchy subjects today. I just wanted to say that, you know, I'm 40 years old, and I was raised, as I'm sure many others were, with the mantra that, you know, hard work and put in the hours and a good handshake will get you to the top. And I think one of the hardest things for me to swallow as I have grown into adulthood and sort of realized the realities of the world, as well as others I know I've talked to, and is that that's not really the case. You know, you can have, you know, great performance and be looked over or passed over or, you know, not hired. So I say bring on the metrics. You know, I think my life would be in a vastly different place if you know, certain things were overlooked while my performance at work were looked at harder. And I think that's so I say bring it on. I think
bring it on. So the old system did not work for everybody. May not have been ideal for Steve, and he says bring on the metrics. And I can imagine a whole big swath of people feeling just that way. Let me get another one. Thank you, Steve. Eric in Nashville, Tennessee. You're on the air, Eric.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I just wanted to say about the personality tests. I think they're a great idea for like the high-level CEO, especially, you know, helping people get a leg up who haven't been able to go to those good schools.
Okay.
And also, if they could add like morality and ethics into it, would be a great thing.
Yeah.
But in the, you know, in the lower-level personality tests, you know, I've taken those. I never pass them. You know, I'm not a stupid person or anything. But you know, I did some research on them, and I found that a lot of people on, like, message boards online and stuff said, you know, they actually passed them by cheating and getting the answers from somewhere. And then also one other point is I did a research on one of the particular companies that makes these tests, and they're in India. And my question is, what do they know about the American work environment if they're, you know, halfway across the world? And that's pretty much all I got to say.
Eric, I appreciate your call. There's somebody who's found, a bump in the road with these tests and skeptical about those who make them. We'll talk to somebody who makes an unusual one in just a second. Let me get one more caller. Eric, thanks for yours. Charles in Broadway, Virginia. Charles, you're on. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, Mike. Hello, Tom.
Hi.
This is question is related, but three parts. Can Moneyball analytics detect creativity, penetrate personality or mental quirks to discern genius? And do they have the potential to eliminate the incidence of the accident or inorganic systems mutation? They're essential for social and economic evolution.
Give me the last one again, Charles. That's interesting. What was the last point?
Well, my background is anthropology, mm-hmm. and so the question is, will it eliminate, because of potential conformity here, will it eliminate the incidence of the accident or mutation essential for social economic evolution?
Ooh, that's really interesting. What a great set of questions. Charles, thank you for those. If I may, let me take those to Guy Haftek. He joins us from New York. Don Peck, stand by. Guy is founder and CEO of KNACK, K-N-A-C-K. It's a Palo Alto, California-based technology startup. It uses gaming, video gaming, to understand and analyze worker potential, from education to work to innovation. Guy Haftek, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom. Good to talk to you.
It's great to have you. So in a nutshell, I take some kind of video game, and in the process, you're assessing my potential as a potential employee. Is that right?
That's part of the picture. As you play the game, we actually give you a tool. We're giving you a technology or an app that provides you the power to get insight into your own potential. So this is not something that we are imposing, but we're actually providing that as a tool, as an empowerment to people, as well as to companies, as well as to employees, to get insight, to measure their own potential, and to identify the directions that are right for them.
So one application would be, I take it myself to gain better self-understanding, but a company could also use it to assess my potential. What kind of circumstances will I find in this video game? Is it like Grand Theft Auto or something different?
So we don't have a Grand Theft Auto game yet, but that's definitely a game that we would love to build, or something along the lines of that, and I think that many people would love that. We currently have two games. One game is actually a very similar game to Angry Birds, in which it's available on iTunes, and it's called Balloon Brigade. And it's a very simple and casual game that where the player inflates water balloons with water and tosses those balloons over to deal with an army of fiery invaders. It's a fun game. It's addictive. People enjoy that. But at the same time, we've designed and built that game with insights from cognitive and social neuroscience and cognitive psychology to mimic and understand different behaviors and micro decisions and in the game. We collect massive amount of data from the game in real time and then apply algorithms to understand what those data streams and data patterns of gameplay behavior mean about the person. So we're getting, in a sense, authentic signal into the intellectual and personality makeup of that person. And you can think about it that we are who we game. A game is a human experience, and humans have been for ages been very drawn to games and used that for a number of purposes. And if you think about what happens in the game, a person behaves in a very natural way, which is the result of engagement and motivation that is part of the design of a game as an experience. And during that behavior, the real attributes of that person, the real dimensions of that person's thinking, behavior, whether it's social, emotional, or personality-wise, or cognitive, that comes to the surface.
So, give me a sense, if you can, Guy. I mean, so I take, you've got an Angry Bird-style game, and I get in there with the video game water balloons and fiery invaders, and what sort of attributes of my personality or capacity can you measure?
Well, we can measure multiple attributes, and we are actually in the process of testing and validating all the spectrum of attributes that we can measure.
Like what?
But to begin with, we can measure your attitude toward risk. Are you highly cautious or prudent, or are you a high risk taker or fearless, perhaps? And you might imagine different jobs where preference to risk or an attitude to risk may be a plus or minus, but for certain jobs, you may want highly risk-averse people, and
right.
For others, you may want a very risk-seeking or people that are very comfortable with risk, such as in startups or entrepreneurship. So it varies by the job, and there is a match for whether you are cautious or risk-taker. There is a right match for you, or that may give you insight that may lead you onto the right opportunity. This is, for sure, one thing that we can measure. We also measure attention, cognitive abilities, working memory, your spatial understanding, your ability to navigate the space and make sense of information and process that information. But we also go into the realm of personality characteristics, your persistence, your grit, how much you care about details, and many other attributes that in total make up the person, the unique aspect of that person, and every person has some unique aspects relative to others.
Well, that's kind of incredible. So you're measuring persistence and grit and cognitive ability. What's the market for this guy? Do you find a lot of appetite for this among companies doing hiring? Are they ready to ask prospective hires to play the game?
So we are actually receiving enormous volume of business interest, and we have not been marketing our product yet in any proactive way, but rather been responding to demand that we've been getting from the market. And I can tell you that the demand comes from every region in the world. It comes from the U.S. as well as from Australia to Europe and South America. And their demand comes for very different types of jobs and across industries, whether it is in professional services and management consulting to consumer goods and media to technology or energy and gas. And within those companies and industries, we have been working very successfully with companies such as Shell, the energy giant. And there we have shown how we very accurately are able to use our games and the data to predict who will make a high-performing innovator. So this is not a low-value job. This is actually pretty high up in terms of the complexity of the job and the economic and business value of that job. And using two of our games, we were able to recommend to Shell people that all of them turned out.
Boy, here I've been avoiding video games for all these years. Maybe I better get on the joystick there. Guy, stand by. Ann in Weymouth, Massachusetts. Ann, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to tell about a situation I had several years ago when I was early in my career. I was applying for a sales job, and I had to take a test. And they said it was nothing to worry about, the personality.
Right, yeah.
I took the test. I got a phone call back, and they were baffled. They said, we don't know how to tell you this, but they said we'd like you to retake the test.
Yeah.
And I said, you mean to tell me I failed? And they said, we were surprised. And I said, are you trying to tell me I don't have a personality?
That must feel terrible.
And I said, that's it. I'm not working with this company. And what turns out, very funny, years later, I got involved in sales and was highly successful because of the things that A lot of people don't value in sales, which is caring about the customer. I'm not money motivated. I'm people motivated and satisfaction, and that brings the money.
And we are going to tuck that story away for this big data future and take reassurance from it if a test turns us away. One more quickly here. Jerry in Boston, our time is growing a little short, Jerry, but you're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I run a company that is involved in a very rigorous process for determining what roles required and what the capabilities are necessary. All of the conversation so far and the research about big data is mainly about roles in the first two levels of the organization. When you move up to the third or higher levels, it's a much more complex thing. Big data is probably 10 years away from being able to actually get a handle on it.
But is it coming? Is it coming, Jerry?
I think the biggest problem right now for roles that we're talking about, manager roles, the biggest problem is in evaluating what constitutes effectiveness. What is it that we're trying to determine? And most companies are all over the map when they're trying to decide who is effective. And until we can establish that, that's going to be difficult. You can, as you said at the beginning, you can count code, you can count other things, but when you get to the third and higher levels, it's very hard to have quantitative indices of effectiveness. But once you have a system, a good qualitative system for evaluating effectiveness, then it becomes possible to assess people in a rigorous scientific way, their capacity to handle complexity.
Jerry, we're out of time right there, but I appreciate your call. You can feel it may be difficult, maybe some time off, but you feel the dynamic of this century pushing in that direction where one day maybe everybody has an algorithm on their tail, whatever position they have in the company. Guy Haftek, we wish you good luck with your video game. If I have to take it one day and don't do well, I may curse your name. But for today, you fascinate us. The company is Knack out of Palo Alto. Thank you very much for joining us, Guy.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And Don Peck, thank you so much for raising the curtain on all this for us. It's a really fascinating arena you've taken us into. Thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure, Tom.
Don Peck at The Atlantic Magazine. His piece is, They're Watching You at Work, in the December issue. Listeners, good luck to you all in this future. I guess we're all in it together sooner or later. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.